It's like you gotta take what you can get.
Yes.
Even for Native American, I don't feel guilty when I play Native American because I have a lot of Native American blood in me. And, but, you know, Latin, I get Latin. Oh God, here's another story for you. In New York, I did this play something like this. It was about these girls at a strip club. It was actually an off-Broadway play that was very funny. And I can't remember the title of it, but I went in originally auditioning for the Black role in the show. And then they said, can you come back and audition for the Puerto Rican role? And in there, this is in my day where I'm like, no, I am Black. I am Black. I am Black, which I still am. I am Black, but I'm also a lot of other things too. I recognize that. I realize that I am not just one thing. So I was kind of arguing with them going, well, but I'm here for the Black role. I'm here for the Black, but can we just see you in the Puerto Rican role? And so I said, okay, fine. So I go outside, I go over the lines, I come back in and I do my best Rosie Perez impersonation. I get the role. And the director said I was more Puerto Rican than the Puerto Rican girls.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Multiracial White Boy Podcast. I'm your host, Kim Noonan. I'm a mixed transracial adoptee from Vietnam, and this is my podcast where I examine the impact of my white upbringing by having personal discussions with other mixed individuals about racial identity. That small audio clip is from my guest, actress Tiffany Phillips. Tiffany is the creator of the web series Ethnically Ambiguous. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. However, let's talk about a little bit about her upbringing. She was raised in Apple Valley, where, according to her, there were no apples, but lots of rednecks, many whom she got into fights with because Tiffany is very multiracial looking. And, you know, she could pass for a lot of things, but she grew up and always identified herself as Black. And although she has always identified herself as Black, Tiffany has played multiple ethnicities. So FYI, this episode is very actor friendly. And, you know, let's be frank. Most of the episodes have featured many people in the entertainment industry because even though I've done mostly films to this point in my career, I did start out as an actor. Yes, I think I mentioned that before, but yes, I did act. At one time, a long time ago, I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts where I met Angel Parker and many other people that are lifelong friends. And it was a good foundation, and it's definitely helped me out as a director. Anyways, so yes, I was an actor. It was a long time ago when I arrived in Hollywood with plans of being a movie star. However, you know, I quickly learned that I was mixed because other people in the industry saw me as Asian, Filipino, and Hawaiian. And I remember my improv group at Second City thought I was a white guy. And if I may be honest, the improv group was spot on. Because if you've been listening to this podcast, you know I'm a mixed transracial adoptee from Vietnam, but I grew up with a white family, man. I spent a great deal of my upbringing trying to fit into white spaces and denying that I was Asian and or a person of color. You've heard it before. Anyways, so when I finished the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, I got an agent and quickly I began auditioning. And nobody, and by that I mean an agent or a casting director, knew what roles I was right for. I was constantly being called like a wild card, or you could play Latino, Asian, Hawaiian. And this came as a shock to me. Because all my life, I didn't want to be identified, as I said before, as a person of color. And now suddenly, now that I'm in Hollywood and I want to do something that I really love, I was told I was one, that I was a person of color. And that came as a shock. Yet, I went along with it. I played the game. I auditioned for all kinds of roles meant for people of color. Yet, I never fit in. But after a few years of living in Hollywood, you know, everything changed when my biological Vietnamese sister found me. Because when we met, there was no denying it any longer. I had a blood-related family member who had memories of me from the war and told me all these batshit crazy stories about our biological Vietnamese mother and how she survived during the war, etc., etc. Now, granted, I was only an infant at this time because I was brought over as an infant to America. So I don't remember any of this, but I assure you this information about the place of my birth and about my biological Vietnamese family was overwhelming as fuck. So shortly after, I was dying and grieving inside, and I had to see a therapist. And from that moment on, I was never the same person when I went out for auditions. In fact, I remember auditioning for this commercial for Good Guys. I don't know if you guys remember Good Guys. They were like the poor man's Best Buy back in the early 2000s. Anyway, a casting assistant walked up to me and said, "Look, there are no people of color here to read with you and only white chicks available to read with. But you have this exotic look going on, so I'm trying to figure out where to put you." And I didn't find this as a microaggression at all at that time. And I'll be very honest, I appreciated how blunt he was and how honest he was. So eventually I read with this white girl who actually I'm still friends with. She lives in Eagle Rock, and I got a call back for the commercial. That's when you're essentially a finalist, and it's a big deal because it's potentially good money. So I go to the callback, and they have one group of Asian couples and another group of white couples. So I go there, and everyone's waiting around, and I see the white girl I read with, and you know, we assume we're probably going to get paired together because we did a good job together the first time. But no, they put me with the Asian couples. And I don't know how else to say it. I looked and felt out of place because I didn't look Asian enough. I didn't feel Asian enough. And I had internalized that all my life as it is. So it had kind of exasperated it. And it, you know, I just wasn't comfortable. But having said that, had I booked that commercial as an Asian person with another Asian woman by my side, I would have taken that money and ran with it. Had I booked more Asian, Hawaiian, and Latino roles, you bet your ass I would have taken those roles in a second. So yes, I was an actor, and I read for a ton of stuff back then, early 2000s. That would be seen as terribly inappropriate in today's world. But I did it because I wanted to break in. It's as simple as that. I wanted to be an actor. I wanted more credits. I wanted a career. So I talk a lot about that with Tiffany today because she played Mei Ling, a Chinese character in Mortal Kombat. And she played Pocahontas in a play. She told me she has a great story where she booked a Puerto Rican role. But let me tell you, man, despite booking those things, she was raised as a proud black woman in America. And once again, look, I get it. Despite what we know now and how that would be seen as inappropriate. And I think, too, that we need Asian roles played by Asian people and Latina roles played by Latinos, etc., etc. But if I'm being perfectly honest, I don't regret for one moment auditioning for those roles I had no cultural connection to. If you look at my DNA, man, I'm multiracial. I'm all over the place, and so is Tiffany. And I don't regret it. I don't. I was doing what I had to do back then. I don't regret it. And nor does Tiffany. And I assure you, as long as we continue to group people monoracially, mixed and or multiracial people will never serve a chance to be seen in this industry. And nor will our stories. So hopefully you'll see where we're coming from and where Tiffany is coming from as a result of, you know, listening to this conversation. This is me and Tiffany Phillips. Okay, so your parents, you were born in Maryland and your parents divorced, but both your parents were Black, but both your parents were mixed.
Yes. So both of my parents, my mother's Creole. I don't know if you're familiar with Creole, but Creole is, you know, Black, French, Native American. It's a whole amalgam of different ethnicities. My dad is Black, Cherokee. I mean, it spans generations. I did an ancestry DNA test. And I mean, I think there were at least 20 ethnicities that came up in my mind.
Yeah, so did same with me. Yeah, it was nutty.
Yeah.
And so but you essentially identified just with being Black though.
Yeah. So my mother always raised me, and so did my dad. People were going to question me, but they never raised me thinking that I was anything but African-American. I'm Black. I remember one time I was standing outside and I was talking to these kids and I was telling them, I'm Black, I'm French, I'm Native American, I'm this. And my mom came in and she goes, walks over and says, no, Tiffany, you're Black. Like that day when I was a kid, she said, you don't need to explain yourself to anybody. You're Black. Your dad is Black. Your mom is Black, period. And if you go and you apply for a job, the box that you check is African-American. So that's who you are. And that's how I've always identified. But I've never gone around explaining all the different ethnicities that I am, unless they keep insisting. But I wasn't raised that way.
But you are multiracial.
Yeah. If you look at my ancestry DNA results,
I know. I mean, like it is, but it's interesting because your parents kind of raised you with the idea of being Black. Cause that's, essentially how you're going to be in presenting, how they say it today. But then you told, like, I have everyone write like a little bio and you wrote me one and you said that it's confusing to people when I tell them I'm Black and both my parents are Black because obviously I have light complexion. So is it still confusing to them? And what makes sense to you? And what do you do now, despite how others may perceive you, especially in Hollywood?
Well, it will always be confusing. When I say both of my parents are Black, I kind of get this, really? I'm like the Sandra and Denise of the Cosby Show. I'm the light skinned kid of the bunch. Even though, if you looked at me and my brother, they're different skin tones, which is interesting. My oldest brother Tyson, he has more of a brown complexion, and Eric and I are very fair. And Eric also has blue eyes. So it's interesting how the DNA, you know, flows through each person. But I am still explaining. I will always have to explain, probably till the day I leave this earth, what my ethnicity is, because it's always a question. I'm constantly getting the question of, what are you? What are you mixed with? Or the question usually is, where are you from? Apple Valley, California. Where are you from? Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm Black and what else? So it's always going to be a question. When I walk into castings, they don't sit there and ask me that question because they're not allowed to ask that question. But I have played numerous ethnicities. It has worked in my benefit in a certain respect where I have played Native American. And I can say, yes, I do have this amount of Native American in me. I even played Asian before. I played Mei Lin in the Mortal Kombat TV series. They put a long ponytail on me. And next thing you know, I was Asian. It is always a question. It will probably always be a question for the rest of my life, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And I'll talk more about that because I want to expand on that. But centered around your, you know, your series of Ethnically Ambiguous. But I want to pivot back just to your upbringing in Apple Valley, because you moved there and you said your parents divorced at three, right?
Yeah, I have two older brothers. My parents divorced when I was three. And in Apple Valley, there was an Air Force base, George Air Force Base, which is no longer there. So when they divorced, that's where my mom stayed and raised me and my brothers.
Single mom.
Now, would she, single mother. Yep.
Oh,
would
wow.
she have chosen to raise us in Apple Valley? Probably not. But that's where we ended up because it was affordable. And the schools were there were good schools. And she thought, yeah, this would be the perfect place to raise my children. But it was a majority white town and kind of known as being a bit rednecky. So
I grew up kind of, I don't want to say kind of close, probably an hour and a half from Apple Valley.
Oh,
I grew up in San Diego in Escondido, California.
Okay.
And that's kind of close to the San Bernardino Valley, Big Bear area. It's like 2 hours away, 2-3 hours away. So it's funny how, because I went to Boise State, it's funny how like people always like, oh, you're from California, you're by the beach, and they're familiar with Melrose Place. I'm like, I live in the Valley. You have no idea. Like, you have no idea. It's probably the same thing with Apple Valley. You're like, yeah, I'm from California, but it's like people have no idea about the rural, that those areas.
Yeah, there are no apples in Apple Valley. This is the first thing. Oh, is there a lot of apples in Apple Valley? No, there's a lot of rednecks, but there's not a lot of apples.
So let's talk about that, because you talked about how you got bullied by ignorant white kids and that, you know, you really didn't fit in anywhere. And did you have much of a connection with your black side of your family?
Well, that's the thing. The whole family is my black side. My black side is on my mom's side. The black side is on my dad's side. And the whole family always identified as black. Yes, it's very apparent that we're light skinned and there are other ethnicities in us, but that's just, we're black, period. That's just how I've grown up. So I didn't grow up in Columbus, Ohio. That's where my dad's side of the family was. And
well, that's what I was wondering. Yeah. Did you get to know the extended part of your black family, I guess?
Yes. I was close with them. I always said if I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, where my cousins who looked like me grew up, where it was majority black, the schools they went to were majority black. They were the cream of the crop at those schools. They were prom queen, all this stuff. And here I was in Apple Valley getting bullied and misunderstood. And I used to always say, I wish I grew up in Columbus, Ohio with my cousins and my other side of the family. But that's just what happens when a family is a broken family. Like your parents divorced, my dad continued to live in Ohio and we lived in Apple Valley. And that's where it was affordable for my mom to raise us. But they had a different life. Even though we looked alike, me and my cousins, we were leading two completely different lives.
How do you mean, what do you mean by that, leading two completely different lives?
So, for example, my cousins went to a high school that was majority black. So there, they were understood. They were popular. You know, they were the cute little light-skinned black girls in the school. Oh, da 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 da. They were wearing, you know, winning prom queen, homecoming queen. Whereas I was in the minority at my school. And not just the minority amongst the white kids, but even amongst the black kids, because I didn't really fit in with them either. So
yeah, I've heard that a lot from some black people. Like Caitlin Becker was on the show, a couple other women that are white and presenting who are black, you know, had some difficulty too. So how'd you navigate around that growing up in Apple Valley? Excuse me real quick. I'm having some technical stuff here. Oh, okay.
Are you hearing me pretty good?
Yeah.
Are you hearing me well? Okay, good.
Yeah. So
you asked how did I navigate that?
How did you navigate around your racial?
I got in a lot of fights.
Well, you did.
Oh yeah. I used to get in fight. Like my brothers, I have two older brothers. And I remember one day I came home from school. I was crying because some, you know, big girl was bullying me. And he says, you come back home and you're crying like this again, I'm going to beat you up. Next time you go to school and she comes up to you and says that shit to you, you punch her in the face. And I sure did. The next day I went to school, she came up to me and was saying her stuff and I punched her. And that kind of became my MO after that. My mother did not like that at all. She's, stop telling Tiffany to go punch people at school. Stop telling, she's a girl, she's not a boy. But I was defending myself. After a while, it was like, I can only take so much. And pretty soon I stopped getting bullied because they knew they were going to get knocked out.
Yeah, that's good. Cause I have had this discussion before on the podcast. Cause I never fought back. Cause I was the lone Asian kid in the white family. Everyone knew I was adopted. I was hyper aware almost of my Asian ethnicity being around all these white people basically sometimes.
Oh, yes.
And like when they're slant eyes and stuff like that. I just never did anything because I was afraid I'd get my ass kicked or like I just wanted to be liked or something dumb. In other words, I didn't be an advocate for myself, but you fought back.
Yeah, it took me a while. It wasn't in elementary school. I was coming home crying almost every other day, but it was once I got into junior high that I started fighting back. And you know, you do have to be your own advocate, but it's hard for kids because I also had that I want to be liked syndrome. And
did you go into white spaces?
As in?
I guess, did you get to a point where you're like, oh man, this sucks. I just want to feel like I'm white and just fit in.
Well, I wished I had the white hair. I wished I wish the white boys would like me when I was in LA. I always had crushes white boys. Oh yeah. When I was, cause that's all there was. There wasn't a lot of black kids, and the black kids that were there were gangbangers. And I started hanging out with the gang. This is in my comedy set. I talk about how in high school I was hanging out with the gangbangers at my school because those were really only the black kids that were there. And in Apple Valley, there were more wannabe gangbangers, but they were pretty legit at the same time. Like, you don't want to cross them, but I never gangbanged. I just hung out with them because I wanted that street cred, or I wanted to be
right.
Black. I wanted to fit in with my people.
Right.
So here I am hanging out with them, smoking weed, drinking 40s, knowing that this is not me at all. Like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, but you do. I did all that stuff too. Cause you want to just, you're kind of just now, you're trying to find your identity. You're kind of going in and out. So then you went to New York, and I assume you went there to try acting out.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I went to New York at 17. I graduated high school early, and I auditioned for the American Musical and Dramatic Academy. And I'd never been to New York in my life. So my first time going to New York was my dad flying in with me because he wanted to make sure I was going to be safe. And of course, he was slightly freaked out when we were driving through New York because it wasn't what it looked like in Sleepless in Seattle. When we were driving through in the taxi cab, I remember my dad was looking out the window like, oh my God, I'm about to leave my baby here. But then when we got to the dorm rooms, he saw the dorm rooms were nice. We were in a safe area up on the West End. So this was a different experience to me because once I got to New York, I was surrounded by diversity. It's diversity everywhere. And that's when I feel like I really grew into myself and started to look at myself more as, instead of looking at myself as a race and what am I, I got to the point of, look, I'm Tiffany. No matter if I'm black, white, this or that, I'm a human being. I'm Tiffany. And that's when I started to get to know who I really was. That was when I grew into who I am today.
Did you run into the same problems though? Because you started being an actress and they want you to start finding who you are in terms of what role you're right for and who to market yourself as.
Well, let's put it this way. I was also on this quest to prove how Black I was when I was in New York. And I joined every Black theater company, the Negro Ensemble Company, the National Black Theater Company, and I was getting cast in their plays. But do you want to know what I was always getting cast as? The mulatto slave girl. That was like, I was always playing the mulatto slave girl. I'm not even kidding you. About 3 or 4 different plays I did where I played the mistress, the mulatto slave girl, because there's something with you being light-skinned that almost light-skinned black female that it almost sexualizes you a little.
Yeah,
bit.
You were like Thomas.
You're the other woman.
You're Thomas Jefferson's like mistress,
yes.
Basically.
I'm his side piece. But yeah, it was interesting what I was getting cast as. But I didn't book any film and television when I was there. I did a lot of theater, but no film and television. I didn't start booking film and television until I moved to Orlando, Florida, where I was working at Disney World. So Disney World was another thing. So they brought me in for the Lion King show. I auditioned while I was in New York. And when I got the Lion King show, I played the Nala character, Princess Kabibi, the singing princess. And then they started utilizing me around the park as other singing princesses. Pretty much every ethnic princess. I was Pocahontas, Jasmine, Esmeralda. They utilized me. They said, oh, we could use her as different. Oh, she could literally fit into any of our ethnic princesses. And that's what I did when I was at Disney. And in Florida is where I started booking TV work. And what was my first gig on television? It was Mortal Kombat. It was a TV series. I don't know if you remember this. I was all of like 19 or 20 years old. And the character I played was Mei Lin. And guess what? She was a massage therapist. She came in and she gave them a massage. And she talked like this, whatever you like. Da, 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 da. And then I ended up stealing all their shit and getting into this like, I'm going to beat you up. And so I seduced them, which is also an Asian female stereotype. Oh, I come in, I seduce you, and then I steal your shit. So it was interesting, the roles that I was getting at that time. So stereotypical, which I don't know if you could get away with that now. I don't know if I could get away with playing Asian now, even though I did in my ancestry DNA had 3%. There was 3% Asian. Turns out I do have some Asian in me.
What are your feelings now if you were to do something like that? Play Mei Lin, if it was offered to you like tomorrow.
Well, I don't know if I would want to play a character that I think I feel a little guilt because I am not Asian. That's not how I identify. Even though, yes, I do have a little bit of Asian in me, but I know that there's Asian actresses that would like that role, that would do wonderful at that role and probably be a better fit than I would be. So I feel like there would be some kind of guilt if I were to do that now, to be honest.
Yeah, because like when I was acting back then, it was in early 2000s, that was kind of considered appropriate and you could do that. And that's what they were doing with me as well. Hey, you could play a Latino guy. You could play a Filipino individual. You know, you could present as white. And I was just like, I'll do fucking anything
right
at that point. But given what we know now, it's so wrong.
But at the same time, Kim, where is the place for us? This is why I wrote ethnically ambiguous.
Yeah. And then exactly.
People who are multiracial, then I'm like, and multi-ethnic. Still, it's like, you got to take what you can get.
Yes.
Even for Native American, I don't feel guilty when I play Native American because I have a lot of Native American blood in me. And but you know, Latin, I get Latin. I play. Oh God, here's another story for you. In New York, I did this play called Live, something like this. It was about these girls at a strip club. It was actually an off-Broadway play that was very funny, and I can't remember the title of it. But I went in originally auditioning for the black role in the show. And then they said, can you come back and audition for the Puerto Rican role? And this is in my day where I'm like, no, I am black. I am black. I am black, which I still am. I am black, but I'm also a lot of other things too. I recognize that. I realize that I am not just one thing. So I was kind of arguing with them going, well, but I'm here for the black role. I'm here for the black, but can we just see you in the Puerto Rican role? And so I said, okay, fine. So I go outside, I go over the lines, I come back in and I do my best Rosie Perez impersonation. I get the role. I get the role. And the director said I was more Puerto Rican than the Puerto Rican girls.
Oh my God.
And it ain't that funny.
Yeah, it's just weird how, you know, I think about the way things were back then, the way they are now, but you are right in that you are multiple things.
Yeah.
And that
we can't deny that.
You know, exactly. We can't deny it. And it is acting. I think we put too much emphasis in sometimes the appropriation where we should be emphasizing it perhaps in our schools and things like that, and learn from old Hollywood films that really just, you know, lambasted, you know, racial stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, were like Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah, stuff like that. Exactly. You know, or just like, you know, Marlon Brando or playing like a, you know, an Egyptian or whatever it was. He's my
Liz
favorite
Taylor
actor.
Taylor playing Egyptian.
Yeah, or, you know, but like, it just, I've always just wondered, you know, because you do have a look where I've seen your headshots in different parts of you, and you're like, oh, I'm like, I could see that. You do look like, you definitely could look Vietnamese or Puerto Rican and a lot of different things. And my feeling is that who wouldn't capitalize on that?
Right. You got to work.
You got to work.
And until they start, that's why I wrote Ethnically Ambiguous, because I don't feel like they're writing the roles for us people. And if you think about it, this world in about 20, 30 years, everybody's going to be mixed. Everybody's going to be ethnically ambiguous. And so why is that not reflected on television? Why are we not seeing more of that? Why aren't we seeing stories like when they show, where there's a new Tracy Ellis Ross show. Is it Tracy? Is she playing it? It's a white parent, black parent. Okay. That's a scenario that we are all very familiar with, biracial families. But where's the scenario like my family, where I have two black parents that are kind of mixed looking, and then they have I want to see a family that reflects what I'm familiar with and what most of America is familiar with. Not everybody comes from a black parent or a white parent or an Asian parent and a white parent. Everybody's kind of mixed up in this day and age. So why is that not reflected in television and film? I would like to see more of that.
I think it's just we are still so conditioned to assume everything monoracially.
Yep.
And that's why people like you, people like me, when we were out there, we were just a bit confused because we thought we grew up, you know, watching Steven Spielberg movies or John Hughes movies or whatever. And we kind of saw ourselves as those people, despite the fact that they were white and or black.
Yep.
And we like, oh, I could do that. That looks fun. And then you realize, oh, I'm this person. And the best thing you did for yourself when you're in New York was be like, I'm learning about Tiffany and who Tiffany is. And that's the best thing you can do. And you did your own story, your own series as for Ethnically Ambiguous. And you talk about, you have your episode, but before the episode, you have the story behind the story. Why'd you decide to do that?
Because I got a lot of questions where people were asking me if this really happened. And so that's why I felt like, let me do a story. Also, I only had three episodes. The funding only covered three episodes. So I'm like, well, let me do a story behind the story. And that's another episode because people wanted more. So at this time, I am looking for funding to shoot the rest because I wrote eight episodes. I have a full season and people do want to see more. And it's amazing the feedback I got from people. I was getting messages and even in the comments saying, I feel seen. People like me, people like you, they're like, thank you for this. I feel seen. I feel like this, you're telling my story. This is, oh God, this happens to me all the time. So that's what encouraged me to keep going with Ethnically Ambiguous. Because as filmmakers, actors, artists, we know that money is the thing. You got to have the money to shoot the films and the web series. And I believe that the money is going to come because this is something that's important. And what I love about Ethnically Ambiguous is that you're getting some learning from it, but it's not beating you over the head with it. It's under the guise of entertaining you and you're laughing. But at the same time, you're learning a few things.
Yeah.
I didn't want it. Yeah, you have to do that.
I still think you have to tell a good entertaining story.
Yeah.
No matter what, you know, it's entertaining or at least engaging and dramatic or whatever to make your point. But I want to talk about one episode where you got a casting director talking to you about Sass and with more hood. And you even talk about in the story behind the story that you can't say, they can't say that anymore. They can't suggest common stereotypes anymore. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think, well, now everybody is hyper aware of coming across either racist or they're hyper aware of how they, everybody's kind of walking on
Communicate the
eggshells, let's say,
language.
when it comes to race, yes, and communicate how we want you to be a little more ethnic. Which they can't say we want you to be more black. There's no way they can say that. But even then, that was a real situation. He said, "I can you be a little more hood?" He said, "Hood." I'm like, what do you mean, like hood? Like,
Yeah.
pop a cap in your ass? Like, what are you talking about? Oh, so you associate being black with being hood? Like, that said a lot. And that actually wasn't even that long ago. That was maybe 8 or 9 years ago. Wasn't even
Oh yeah,
that
absolutely.
long
I've
ago.
had plenty of people come on the podcast like yourself and tell me they got the same kind of suggestions. So how Because the room has changed a little bit, have the stereotypes changed?
Well, I haven't really been in the room much these days because of the
Yeah,
pandemic.
I know. Tell me about
It's all
it.
been, yeah, it's all been self-taped, so I'm not getting that feedback. But I mean, I feel like maybe they have, but we still have such a long way to go. We really do. And I feel like they still don't really look at me as black. Like, they buy me more as Latin, even Asian mix, white. I don't, I almost got white one time. I thought, wow, okay. More than they buy me as black. Yeah, I feel like I used to crack a joke saying, I'm just under Halle Berry complexion, so I don't really qualify as black to the
Like Halle
entertainment
Berry
industry.
light.
Yeah, I'm lighter than Halle Berry. It's like once you get lighter than Halle Berry, it's a little tougher for them to see you as black because they want Middle America to see you as black. They don't want to confuse Middle America who is watching these shows and these commercials. And another thing, I've been in LA years and years. I booked network shows. I have not booked one single commercial. How crazy is that? How crazy is that?
Well, that's when where I feel like most mixed people have most of their bookings, like the people I've
Yeah,
talked to.
I haven't booked one. And whenever I see the person who booked it, they're darker than me. They're an identifiably black person or identifiably Latin. I've never been, I felt like I've never quite been enough for what they were looking
Well,
for
that's
in
what I was going to
commercials.
say. I was just going to emphasize that it seems like with everything in every way you grew up was to be raised as a black individual and to express yourself as a black individual. So do you feel like it's kind of been an ongoing personal struggle for you to fight as an individual who is black and who wants to stay in the lane of someone who is without having to, butt heads with everybody.
I do feel like there's still this need to prove myself. Deep down, I feel like I need to prove myself. And I don't know when it's like ongoing in my life and something that I'm working on because I don't want to feel that way. I don't
No,
want to
I
feel like I
grew up
need
with
to
the
prove
same shit. And
anything
then
to
I was,
anybody.
yeah. And then I'm proving myself in other ways that I don't have to. Like it trickles to other areas of my life
And
of being
isn't that crazy?
competitive.
Yes, very competitive. And the crazy part is when you grow up not feeling enough, then you get into an industry, like of all the industries for us to get into, we become actors, which is the most label-driven industry that there's so much rejection. It amplifies the not enoughness that you feel.
Yeah.
So you have to really go deep and get to the core of who you are and why you really want to do this. When I first became an actress, as much as I love being on stage, my mom knew I loved performing and this is what I wanted to do. But she asked me one time, are you becoming an actress because you really love acting? Or are you trying to prove something to all those kids that called you ugly growing up? And I had to think about that. Like, I think both of these are kind of on point because there is a part of me that whenever I would get a role on television, and especially if it said beautiful or pretty, there was this little girl in me going, yeah, See what I'm talking about? Look who's ugly now, bitches. There was this little 8-year-old in me going, yeah, look who's on TV now.
I'm glad you're being honest about this. Yeah. 100%. Yes. I'm glad you're being honest about this because I think everyone should ask themselves that question because I wish I would have, because there was definitely a part of me that wanted to prove it was to prove to be a somebody.
Yep.
Like I could be a somebody despite what you thought, despite how I grew up. But then as I've gotten older, it's become more about finding your own voice. Who's that voice? And that's why I did my own films. That's why I did write my own projects now. Because that voice is essentially the wholeness of who you are and who you're discovering who you are.
Yes.
And the ego inside of me, like you were suggesting, the examples you gave of like, you know, fuck you. I did it. I'm doing it. You know, now that I care less about that when that comes up, I don't really care about that as much. Yeah. Because I guess you know yourself better. But with your series, Ethnically Ambiguous, your intention of the series is to express your point of view and to make changes in the industry, right? For age-old stereotypes?
Yes.
So how in your real life in acting career have you tried to advocate for the changes you want to see?
Well, I think I was very specific with my agent and manager about how I wanted to be submitted and that I was open to playing other ethnicities, but that I am Black and I want to be submitted for Black roles, because I had an agent once say, nobody's going to buy you as Black. We need to, what other ethnicities can you play? And so I feel like that we're in a place in our society that they know that Black people come in all different shades and colors. Not every Black person looks like, you know, Wesley Snipes or Angela Bassett. Like, we come in different shades. And that's what's beautiful about the Black race. But I'm also embracing my other ethnicities. So I did pinpoint how I wanted to be submitted, when before I just let them submit me any old way, but I let them know, how I want you to present me to casting directors. So I feel like that is something that maybe in my younger years, when I first started out acting, I just kind of went willy nilly, like whatever you want to submit me as.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, this is how I want to be submitted. You have to get a little more targeted and specific when you're not specific, if that makes sense.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up to your agent, because Brittany Young from Netflix's Glow was on the podcast. I had her on, and she did something really brave, I thought. She is biracial like yourself, and she's heavyset, and she initially went in for a role that was Latino, because she, like yourself, could pass for a Latino in a lot of ways, and or Samoan, because she's heavyset. And she went in there and by her talent alone booked the role. Having said that, she became a little concerned to how they were kind of presenting her in the show. And she went to the showrunners and asked, can you please include my biracial background in the show? And they totally were game. And it kind of blew me away, because like, I think about my younger self, if I would have had the audacity to go to a showrunner and be like, hey, I want you to represent me the way I weigh my lived experiences, I would have been so afraid, because I would have been like, dude, if you say that, you're going to get your ass, your only opportunity. They're going to kick you off the set. And I think we underestimate when people show up for themselves and how much respect we have when people do it. Like, we're never going to get the answer. We actually get the opposite sometimes, like she did, or like you did with your manager, where they see it like, yep, okay, I get it. you don't want to do that anymore. You want to be more you. Totally understand.
You know, what I've always wanted is say, okay, Rashida Jones, take Rashida Jones, for instance, she's biracial. Quincy Jones is her father. She's got a white mother, but you don't ever actually see her. Have you ever seen her playing a race? No, she just plays the quirky, cute girl who's dating the guy. She's usually paired with white guys that as her boyfriend, except until she did the show with, I'm still waking up, Kim. The show with a guy who created Blackish.
Yeah.
I can't think of the names right now. Okay, so then she had a black husband, but throughout her career, she's just been Rashida Jones. She's just been funny and talented, and it's been about who she is and the fact that she's funny and she has all of this talent. Like, I would rather be in a place where I'm showcasing my talent instead of my race. You know what I mean? Like, it
there's no doubt about it. That's why I like Master of None, because
yes,
there was always just people out there just being themselves. They our whole lived experience and existence just doesn't set around our race. It does sometimes, and it's inconvenient, but not all the time. We're just going out there and going to yoga or going to boxing and, you know, going to get ramen like everybody else.
Yes, exactly.
You know, we like white things too, or considerably white things too, or we like, you know, listen to rap too, or listen to country. You know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I like rock and roll. I like everything. I don't like everything, but I've always admired her career. Granted, my dad isn't Quincy Jones.
I was going to say that because, like, look, not only Quincy Jones, but she grew up with an elite culture of people.
Yeah.
And at that point, when you have that much money and family prestige, you're seen as, like, you know, that kind of elite stature, and probably anybody with money, unfortunately, in fame, that's all those stereotypes kind of stripped away when you have that kind of power, it seems like, until you lose it, like OJ, when you fuck up.
Don't murder people.
Just don't murder people and you'll be fine. Okay. Well, look, I want to end the podcast. I want you to tell me what you feel optimistic about with your career, with people like yourself, and what you feel optimistic about as if everything's kind of changing a little bit. What's a couple of things you may feel optimistic about?
I feel like maybe the doors are opening up a little bit more for multiracial actors because people have been drawing attention to it. And maybe the industry is becoming a bit more hip to the fact that there are a lot of multiracial people out there, and maybe this should be reflected more in television and film. And I feel like we are on the road to get there with people like you and me, and even Vin Diesel a long time ago. One of the reasons I
did you watch? I have multifacial here on my notes.
Multifacial. Yeah. It was a big
I have that. I'm like, I should tell Tiffany. Cause okay. So when I did my short film about my Vietnamese upbringing with my Vietnamese heritage, a woman, she was on, it was Deborah Thaker. She was part of the Christopher Guest troupe that did all the, you know, mockumentaries like Waiting for Godot. And I took an improv class and got to be good friends with her. And she recommended that movie. And It's so weird because he's so good in it and he's so authentic. Yep. And then he's like, but it goes to also show that we're all kind of prisoners to how we look. And he looks like a fucking action star.
He does.
And that's how they brand him. But he's actually, you could tell there's a guy there that really takes his craft seriously.
Yeah.
And takes his writing seriously. And we don't think that about him. A guy who, you know, wants to do meaty roles and things like that. It feels like he's been denied it or denied himself that. You know what I mean?
Oh, I'm sure he has. Because he doesn't fit into any one box, which is why he wrote Multifacial. And that was an inspiration for me, as well as Issa Rae, Awkward, Her web series.
Oh, that's was great web
what
series.
Inspired, it was such a great web series. And of course, we all hope for what the success that she had, where somebody sees it, it gets picked up, it's put on HBO, and you're nominated for Emmys. We all, of course, this is what we aspire to. But with more people like us creating content and sharing our stories, I feel like it's bridging the gap in the industry of how they perceive what Black is, white is, mixed is, Latin is, Asian. They need to know that we're in a world where everybody has something. With these ancestry DNA tests, you're seeing white people find out, oh, I have Native American me. Oh, there's some Latin. We're all mixed. We're all mixed to a certain degree. So I am optimistic that that is going to become more reflected in the industry. And if I have to bring it there, then I will do so. If I'm one of the people that's going to be responsible for making this change, I'll do it.
Thank you so much, Tiffany Phillips, for coming on the podcast, the Multiracial White Boy Podcast. That was a great discussion. Again, follow Tiffany Phillips. She's on Instagram. She's always posting stuff about her career, but also, you know, as she develops, you know, her web series, Ethnically Ambiguous, be sure to check that out. Once again, I'm the host of Multiracial White Boy. I'm Kim Noonan. Please tune in every other Thursday for all new podcast episodes. Remember to subscribe, to write a review. The reviews go a long way, man. They do. Please write a review. I will see you in a couple Thursdays from now. I'm busy. I'm working on a film, y'all. I'm so happy. I haven't worked forever. It feels like since the pandemic, but I finally got a job. So I might have to take a hiatus from this podcast for a while because I'm working my ass off right now, but it feels good. And I'll keep you guys posted, because there's a lot of stories about this film as I move forward. But when I have the freedom to talk about it, because I don't now, I'll fill you guys in. But I'm excited, and there's a lot of things I want to discuss that have to do about people of color in films. So I'm learning a lot right now as I do this film and how, and the way we're doing the casting. Anyways, thank you again for your support. Have a great weekend. Take care, everybody.